Hello, everyone. We want to welcome you to our next Mixed Faith Marriage Mastermind. I'm Chris Rich, and I'll be leading our discussion tonight. Just by way of a quick introduction, all three of us are coaches. We're in our own mixed faith marriages and families, and we all have three different point of views. I guess if you had three humans, they would all have different points of view. But yeah, we all have different experiences. So I am an active believing member of the church, and Suzette is an active non-believing member of the church, and Brooke is non-believing, non-attending. And I have to say, I kind of feel selfish because I get to hang out with these women once a month, and I feel like I get so much out of these discussions, just being able to pick each other's brains. And I love how I feel like anytime we have these discussions, it helps me to see things from a different perspective that really helps me to understand how my husband might be feeling, that maybe things that I've never even considered. And I love how we definitely have our differences, but I think the point of this is modeling that we can come together and talk about different things in a healthy way. So I adore these women so much, you women that I'm talking to, and I just feel so blessed to have you in my life. And I want to just point out, we are in the trenches with you all that are listening. None of us have it all figured out, and so we are here to be vulnerable, to be real, to be authentic, to help share what we have experienced in our own marriages and also what we see with our clients. So I just want to throw that out there that we don't have it completely figured out. But when we use the tools that we teach you about, they help us in our marriages and families. So tonight we are going to be talking about navigating a mixed faith marriage with our extended families. And I think this is a really important topic because we think of, when you're married, you and your spouse are at the core of your marriage. And but then there's a broader family system with parents, siblings, in-laws, other extended family, cousins, nieces and nephews. And they can all that system all impacts each other. And it can, when you're in a mixed faith relationship or a marriage, that can be very, it just feels like there are a lot of moving parts sometimes. And so tonight we want to talk about that, how to navigate this extended family dynamic. So let's start off, as we always do, by sharing our own experiences and what's been your experience with your extended family as you have navigated your mixed faith marriage?
You want to go, Brooke?
Sure, I'll go. So
Or do you want me?
when I was having my faith transition, I deconstructed almost simultaneously with my younger sister. And it was really helpful. Like, we had a lot of phone conversations. But the part I wanted to highlight is actually, there's six girls all together in my family because, we're Mormon, so we have a big family. There are brothers too, but there are six girls. Since then, all of us have deconstructed. But at the time, I was only talking to one because I was too afraid to talk to the others. Even though they are some of my nearest and dearest friends, I was too afraid to tell them what I was thinking, what I was feeling about my deconstruction, because of fear of judgment, of being marginalized, of just not being loved and accepted in the way that I value so much from them. It was only until literally years later when, it just other things came out and we all got honest with each other. And that it's so fascinating for me. It was fascinating at the time, but it's especially fascinating for me to think about because scary. Like, it's scary. I was expecting judgment. I was expecting marginalization. I was expecting decreased love and attention and affection and all of those things. And I don't know that that's unusual to that people expect that. And you receive it from varying, that's different for everybody. But I fully expected it from those who I knew loved me and cared about me. And it was really scary. My parents are still very active. like, I'll just tell quickly what my situation with my parents is. I joke that with my dad, it's like, don't ask, don't tell. And with my mom, I'm more open about it, but I'm not like, it's not the same as it used to be. But there is more openness and more conversations around that. But I do highly, highly value the relationship I have with my sisters and that we can still talk about it openly. But it took us a minute to even be able to share openly what we were all like, very, like, almost like at the same time experiencing, but not brave enough to share with each other.
Interesting. I'll just say that I live in a different state than all of my family. And that has been really helpful, because me figuring this out and figuring it out with my husband, and as we're trying to figure out how to do this with our kids, you know, we don't have family watching us. And I feel like that the distance buffer has been really helpful. I feel like we were able, I mean, I shared some with my family and with some of my siblings as I was kind of processing. I feel like, you know, it was hard on those relationships initially, but I feel like, you know, I have a good relationship with all my family there. I have one brother that's kind of deconstructed, but all of my other five, there's six of us also, they're all very active. My parents are active. And then my husband's family, I didn't talk to them about it until we had already figured out what we were doing. So I was already kind of years in to my own change of faith. And then when we kind of had it figured out, I talked to them, which my husband preferred. He did not want to have, you know, to him, that was terrifying, to have his parents know that my faith had changed. So they're very, very devout. His whole family, very devout. All his siblings are active. So, the distance, the physical distance makes it easier. And I feel for couples that are doing this when they live in the same town, in the same wards, even in the same, it can get really complicated when you're trying to figure this out and you have the eyes and the pressure, or just, you know, the family going through it kind of at the same time as they're like watching you and processing all of it. So that's my experience.
I want to give you guys both a hug. It's so, you know, it's interesting from being the active believing member. I had so much support from, so my family, I am one of five, and my family, I've got mostly in, one out, and they were all very, very supportive and very, I was really struggling. This was very traumatic for me, and I was grieving and mourning, and my family was wonderful to be there to support. My husband's family, he's one of eight, and most of them have deconstructed their faith. And my in-laws were so supportive because they had been through this before, and it was very, they're wonderful. I really won the in-law lottery. They're just fantastic. And they have been so supportive of both of us. I feel like, from my point of view, I feel like both of our families were very supportive of my husband and my kids who have also left the church. And I think they may have a different story just because it's a different, you know, it's fascinating to hear your experiences, and they probably had very similar experiences to what you shared, where, you know, being an active believing member, I had so much support and people were, you know, there to rally around me and to, I think that's interesting just to note that, because it was hard for me to have to go through that experience. And I had a lot of support from, I never questioned if they were going to love me or any of that. So I think a very interesting thing to highlight, a very different experience.
That is very interesting, actually. And I think very true. It for a lot of couples. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think I do have clients that they've had very different experiences with that. So I think, yeah, we are sharing three experiences, and they could all look, there could be a lot of other experiences out there too. So Okay, so my next question, how do you balance maintaining relationships with extended family while staying true to your own beliefs and marriage? Let's talk about that.
Okay, I've got some thoughts on this one. I think this is hard. It's hard to do this. We want to belong, a lot. And in our efforts to belong, we often sacrifice our own values, our own preferences, our own beliefs. Because a lot of times that belonging feels like safety, security, approval, all of those things that we want so badly. So with that said, I say there's two skills that I think are totally worth developing. And one is identifying your values and your preferences. They're often unrelated. And the other one is to learn to adhere to them, even in the face of disapproval. And again, I want to highlight that's not easy. We do not want to pretend in any way that's easy, because approval is often synonymous with safety. And sometimes you have to be able to decouple that first and be able to create your own sense of safety, even without the approval of others, so that you can do these things you're asking, maintaining these relationships with extended family while being true to your own beliefs in marriage. I don't want to pretend that, oh yeah, you just have a boundary. I wish it were that easy. But I think it's a little bit of a deeper dig. You have to be able to identify your values and preferences, which is in and of itself is not easy work. And then to be able to learn how to adhere to them. And that could mean identifying what you need for safety, or what you identify as safety, because that's a very primal, important thing that we all seek. And then being able to understand, is this truly safety, or is this just approval? Is this and to do that kind of work. I know me personally, tons of approval and safety in our connections. And I had to decouple those before I could truly do these two things, is identify my preferences and adhere to them, even in the face of disapproval. I had to create and understand my safety issues before I could do that.
Brooke, can I just ask, can you give me an idea of an example of a time of a safety issue for you?
Yes, I can. So, and I'll be really specific here. This was a really interesting work and very helpful work that I had to do as an individual. Is it was so important for me to be approved by my husband, my parents, siblings, all of these things. I wanted them to approve of me. And so my preferences, my values, whatever, become secondary to gaining their approval. And this took a lot of work for me to realize, is because I was ascribing, especially approval of my husband with safety. So for instance, if he approved of me, I was a stay-at-home mom for many years, then I would be safe financially. I would have that security and safety. If my dad approved of me, I would have that safety and security. If God approved of me, I would have that eternal safety and security. So how I was raised and how my brain decided to form and network in and of itself really coupled approval with safety. So when I started to think differently than people whose approval I had always sought, and I started to receive disapproval instead of approval, it was very frightening. I'll just be honest. It was frightening because it felt like my safety was at stake, or my safety was threatened. And I had to learn to decouple my husband's approval with my own personal. When I say safety, I'm not thinking somebody's going to beat me up, but I mean my security, my safety as far as financial safety and these types of things. I was never ever in fear of being physically attacked or anything, but safety for me felt very much security, whether that was financial or even just belonging is also part of how I associated with safety and security. And it ties back very much to my relationship, how I internalized my relationship with God, is I needed approval from God to be safe, to be safe in the eternal realm and the internal, looking at it from that perspective, as opposed to just me here today. And so I would then transfer that need for approval to people in authority, to people with power over me, to people who I felt were important. And it would cause me to over and over and over again discount preferences values, needs, wants, all of those things, because my safety was paramount to needs, wants, preferences, and all of those things, to really turn that around before I could start to create my own sense of safety and security in the world.
Thank you for sharing that. And once again, that was not something that I really, I didn't deal with that in that sense. So thank you for sharing that. Okay, Suzette, tell me your thoughts.
Yeah, I think it's really hard to balance those things if you don't know kind of where the lines are of where do I end and other people begin? What is other people's business and not? Like, if you don't know all those things, then it is a mess to try to balance all of this, like my mixed faith relationship and your family and my family and all of that. So I think it's just really helpful to clarify in healthy relationships, what you do in your marriage is actually nobody else's business in the family. And that was hard for me. And what I believe within myself is actually nobody's business in my extended family. That was something I had to learn. And I kind of learned the hard way. I think I overshared because I felt like I needed to share, like, sometimes with my family what was going on. And then I realized later on, like, I actually don't have to. My beliefs are mine. I know they might impact my family. But actually there is, you know, healthy boundaries is that belongs to me. My beliefs are mine. And they might be curious, they might be interested, they might be impacted, but I can choose to share or not to share. That's private. So I think understanding where those healthy lines are, and you can choose to sit, to share with family, like about your marriage and how you're doing it and how you're raising your kids. But it is not their business. It is not their business. And that gets really messy because they might not agree with that. Family might think it is their business. This is their grandchildren. This is their grandchildren's salvation. This is their child's salvation. It gets really messy. But I think the more we can be clear within ourselves, like, nope, it's actually not their business. And I'll talk later. I know some of your other questions lead to some other things I have to say about how we can still be kind and considerate and relational. We can still have relationships and not just be like, oh, this is none of your business. But I think balancing it first comes from realizing, actually, I don't have to share. We don't have to bring extended family into this at all if we don't want to, because it really is not. That's a boundary violation for them to put input into how you're doing your marriage, how you're raising your kids, how you're believing. That is all a violation of boundaries, which people don't like to hear, but that's the truth. I will speak the truth.
I have to piggyback on that, because like, this has been something I really had to learn as well, is I just, like, I was raised in a large family. You know, you had six kids, you had five, there were nine in my family. We weren't taught boundaries. There were no boundaries. Like, we weren't, like, we, like, our the culture I was raised in, anyway, the way my family was structured, was not one where we had boundaries. Like, you would go and you would tell the bishop everything, you would tell your parents everything. You didn't have personal privacy. It was certainly not. And so as I grew up, I didn't ever consider, like, this is mine and this is private to me. Like, it was everybody's business. And so it was something I really had to learn, is this is my business and I don't have to share my inner everything with those people around me, even if they're my parents, even if they're my bishop, even if they're my husband. Like, it is not like my mother-in-law, my sisters, my whoever. Like, they can earn that, and I can share that if that's something I want to. But for years, I was just like Suzette, and I would just tell everybody everything because I was not raised with a sense of boundaries. I was raised with, it's just, I'm free for all, and everybody has access to, whether it's my efforts, my time, my energy, but also my inner thoughts and opinions and experiences.
And I think on the other side, sometimes I didn't really experience this with my family, but with like ward members or friends, people would come and be like, okay, what's going on? And at the time, there was a part of me that I'm like, well, he did this to me, I'll tell you what's going on. You know, and it was like, there was a, you know, it was, I definitely had this victim mentality. And I, when I told people my story, they're like, oh yeah. And now I wish, you know, looking back, I think sometimes we feel like we need to run interference, and like people will ask stuff and it's like, oh my word, how do I handle this? Do I tell them? Do I not tell them? And recognizing that, you know what, it's okay for me to say, you know what, if you want to talk to him about that, you're going to have to ask him, instead of me feeling like I needed sometimes it feels like I said, running interference. And there was a term that I was on Instagram today and this popped up, emotional triangulation. And I thought this was interesting. So this is when three people are involved in an issue when only two people need to be involved in the issue. So that involves using another person to deliver a message to someone else, or to put pressure on another person to do something, or to gain sympathy for a situation by using another person. And I thought that was interesting because I think a lot of times that happens where we create this triangle where it's okay to say, you know what, you're going to have to talk to them about that. That I can speak for me, but I can't speak for them. So I think that is a helpful concept. Okay, what are some ways to handle unsolicited advice or pressure from family about your mixed faith marriage?
So I'll just share like a little hack. So what I like to do is I like to offer validation without any promises. So it might sound like this, like, thanks for your advice. Thanks for sharing. Like, I can see you feel strongly about this. I can see this is important to you. You know, I've seen you thought a lot about this. Like, that's it. Like, I like, that's the trick, is to just like, I like to maybe be a little curious, but I'm not solution oriented about me. I may be just more curious about them and what they're experiencing, but I just like to just offer the validation, but without being like, oh, I'm definitely going to change now, or you're absolutely right and I'm wrong. I just validate and smile.
Mm-hmm. I love that, Brooke. You don't have to fight back. You don't have to. It's kind of like when somebody gives you a gift you don't want. You're like, thank you. Thank you for thinking of me. And I'm going to give this to the person.
Regift it.
Right. But I love that.
Exactly. It's the re.
So I think my tip would be blood handles blood. So if there are boundary violations, if there's pressure from extended family, if it's the husband family, the husband needs to be the one. This is the general rule kind of in marriage couples world, then the husband needs to deal with his own family and set the boundary with them. If it's the wife's family, she sets the boundary. That's in a perfect world, you know, but it gets complicated really fast because sometimes like one spouse may feel like, well, my family's not intruding. They're just trying to be nice. They're just trying to be loving. They're not. And it's not a problem for them. And so then you might have to set a boundary with them yourself and just say, you know, appreciate what you're doing, but here's, you know, I like to use the language of here's what I'm willing to do. Here's what I'm not willing to do. Like, I'm willing to, you know, let you guys do this with the kids, and I'm willing to, you know, I'm fine with prayers, but here's the lines for me that I'm not comfortable with. I'm not comfortable with you doing blah, 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 X, Y, and Z. So yeah. Ideally, blood to blood handles that. But if not, this is where you have to practice your differentiation and you're speaking up and you're setting your boundaries and that can get messy really fast. But that is part of it. But it's also good for the people on the receiving end to kind of start to see like, okay, there are some boundaries here, to try to kind of disentangle this enmeshed system that LDS families tend to be, that are very kind of all involved, and your salvation is my responsibility. So I need, you know, we got to kind of disentangle that a little bit.
And I think it's important. So Brooke, I love that tip that people can give us advice all the time and we get to choose what we want to do with it, if we want to take it or leave it. I think it can be helpful to understand, you know, to try to understand their point of view. You may not agree with it or need to do anything with it, but a lot of times, you know, people, they care about you. They're concerned. They love you. They have questions. And from their point of view, it makes sense. It's like, oh, I can see why that is a concern for you. It might not be one for me, but just trying to have empathy from where they're coming from. And it doesn't mean you need to change anything about that, but just, I think a lot of times when we can try to figure out, okay, I wonder, I think a lot of times in they might be motivated by fear. And so they're saying things and trying to change a situation that is not theirs to change. But when we look at, you know, their motives and, you know, and like going back to what Brooke said, you know, thank you. And then you get to do with whatever you want with it. But I think that can be helpful to just try to figure out where they're coming from. And also to let people have their own emotions. They are going to have a lot of different feelings about other people's relationships and mixed faith marriages. And it's okay for them to have their feelings, that we don't need to, it's their job to have their feelings. It's okay for people to be disappointed or upset or the different emotions that may come up. It might be uncomfortable and awkward, but it's important to let people have those. Okay. The next question, how do you handle family gatherings or traditions when they conflict with your faith choices as a couple?
Yeah, I'll go first again, because I've done this a lot. I don't go. And this comes back to the boundaries that we were talking about a minute ago, is I don't, and this is work I've had to do, this did not come naturally to me, but it's really served me well, is I've had to come to the belief that I don't owe anybody my time or my energy or my money or my vacation time. Nobody gets this for free because I don't owe it to them. It's mine. And at first that felt incredibly selfish, and it, not just selfish, but like reprehensible. And so I would just give all of that stuff, even though it left me resentful, upset, dissatisfied, like not feeling love and kindness for these people. And I had to really learn to put a boundary around my own energy, time. I'm got a lot going on. I don't just have endless time and money and resources and time off. And I had to just decide not, like, my own boundaries around that. And I didn't go to many things, and it was really good for me. Like, it felt radical, because it was, especially for how I was raised, but it was really good for me to take care of me in that way.
I love that. And I'll talk about kind of the opposite end of, if you do choose to go, I think you can be relational. You can be relational in these kind of instances, but it's not coming from a place of enmeshment and people pleasing. So Dr. Kenneth Adams, he's an expert on family enmeshment. And he says, it's enmeshment if it's coming out of obligation and guilt. If I feel guilty that I'm not going, it's probably an enmeshed system. If I feel obligated to attend this tradition or thing, then it's probably an enmeshed system. But if I'm going because I value relationships with these family members, and I want to be in connection with them, and this is important to me, that my, you know, that's something I find myself doing. Like, you know, I want my kids to have relationships with their cousins. I want these things. It's not coming out of guilt and obligation. It's coming from my values. But I can also take care of myself if I am going and doing it for my own reasons. I can still leave, or, you know, I haven't personally been in any situations that were, you know, so against my values and anything that I had to leave. But again, I live in a different state where, you know, we don't get together with family all that often. And when we do, it's just, you know, it's just family time. So I think there's, I think about, you know, just one example is like wearing garments. You know, for a while I did that so that they wouldn't, I wouldn't disrupt things, you know, so that it was obvious that I was kind of wearing my garments still. But then in time I stopped, and I didn't, you know, I could have, out of people pleasing, been like, well, I'm going to wear clothes that make it look like I'm wearing garments to this family event, to make everybody happy. But again, that's obligation and guilt. But I chose to be true to myself. Like, you know, I don't wear garments, but I could still be relational and be like, I want to show consideration and respect. So I'm not going to show up in a tank top or anything because they might feel awkward. And I don't want to make people feel awkward just because it's their space and I want to be considerate. So I feel like that's being relational, but not people pleasing. You know, I still wear shorts and things like that, but it's, you can be considerate, you can be relational and still be true to yourself. So it's all a balance.
Just adding on to that, I think the staying integrity with yourself, like for me, there were, you know, if there was a baby blessing or a baptism or, you know, those different traditions, those milestones, that was something I really wanted to be a part of. I wanted to be there to support. And my husband had no interest. And so it took me time to be like, you know what, this is something that I want to do. I have a social need, I have spiritual needs, and I had to learn to go and do it on my own. And it definitely was, that was hard for me in the beginning, but then it was just like, you know what, this is a need that I have. I want to be here. And so I'm going to go. And it took a while to realize like, this is okay. This is okay for me to do it on my own. And then we would get back together and do things together. And in the beginning, it was hard because I wanted to be like, well, you should be here. And I'm sure I took him on a lot of guilt trips. And, but just, you know, and then finally being in that space, like, no, you do, I don't want you here if you are uncomfortable and it's not in line with what you want to do. So that was, it took time. And I that has worked for, that's worked for us. So it's kind of like, I'm going to this thing. You're invited. If you want to come, awesome. If not, I'm still going. And, to be able to do that. I think it's also important. I was talking to a client where they were not invited to an event because people assumed, oh, your husband is out of the church, so you probably won't want to be there. And this was very hurtful for her because she was like, no, we do want to be there. So I think it's important that we don't assume that people want to be there or not, but we can make the invitation and then let people decide. And but I think, but we do, we shouldn't assume that we know if people are going to want to show up or not, if that makes sense. Okay, how can couples maintain their own emotional well-being when dealing with tension or conflict with extended family due to faith differences? And with this, we've mentioned a little bit about boundaries, but if we want to bring that up again, so how do you maintain your own emotional well-being?
So when I first read this question, I kind of like giggled to myself. I'm like, you probably don't. Like, you're probably not being perfectly, you know, in your ability to maintain this well-being. And I think part of it is just like it doesn't need to be done perfectly. Because as I was thinking about it, and like often the tension here is that you're not a unified front. Like probably one partner is feeling more aligned with family members, or, you know, like there feels like, you know, like us versus them or them versus us. And I think that might be happening sometimes in these situations where, you know, like, for instance, my husband might feel more aligned with my mom, you know, because there's similar perspectives on things, then, and I would sort of feel like the odd man out or something like that, or odd woman out. And I think that, like, sometimes that's just the situation we're dealing with. Like, that would become the circumstance then that needs to be addressed. Something I like to do is just acknowledging that, like looking at the situation and its fullness and being like, yeah, okay, this is what we got. Like, this is what we got. Processing my emotions, looking at how I'm talking to myself about this. One of the things I like to do at that point, you know, after I've worked through it a little bit, is maybe make some requests. You know, can you support me and have my back if I don't go to this mission farewell? Can you support me and have my back if I do go, because it might be a little challenging for me, or because I might be a little sensitive to things like that? And making some requests about the support or the needs that you have and asking for that. I heard something the other day that was so interesting is one way we build trust in a relationship is by asking for what we need, because you trust that they care. You trust that they're willing to show up. Like if somebody I really loves is going through something hard, I want them to reach out and ask for help from me. And this is like an opportunity to do just that. I think what else is interesting and can show us is if you make requests like this and your spouse is not interested in supporting you or listening to your requests or being able to help like address what it is you're asking for, like that can be very important information too. It can be really hard information, but it can be really important information. So I know this isn't exactly an answer to your question, but I think it's like sometimes this is the reality, is that we're not actually, you know, maintaining a great deal of emotional well-being and dealing really well with tension and conflict. That's okay. But like, there are some things to like be aware of and work through when this does present.
That's exactly where my mind went too, Brooke. I was like, well, who can stay like all emotionally regulated with all the family stuff? Family stuff is messy. Not even in mixed faith marriages. In any couple, like family stuff is messy. And a lot of with my clients, a lot of the inner kind of emotional activation they have around family is often my husband or my wife is not dealing with their family in the way that I want them to. Either they're not telling about their faith crisis, they're pretending, they're talking bad about me when I'm not there. They are not supporting me. My husband or wife is not setting a boundary with intrusive family. And we have to remember that differentiating within your family of origin is the most difficult place to differentiate. Differentiating meaning kind of reveal and define who you are to others and allow them to do the same and stay connected in the process. That's differentiation. Doing that in your family of origin is like the ultimate test of all tests to be able to do that. So, you know, I like to get off my high horse if I ever experience that. Like, how dare my husband, nah, blah, blah, blah. Like, oh, well, get off my high horse and watch me in my family of origin. I go right back into my people pleasing and like quiet and not, you know. So have a little grace for each other that dealing with your families where all of your adaptations and all of your coping strategies developed is the hardest thing in the world as far as differentiation goes. So if they're not doing it well, if they're not doing it to your liking, if they're not just getting in there and, you know, setting boundaries with family and doing all that stuff, well, just have a lot of compassion for them in this process. Because even those of us, you know, who know a lot of stuff, you know, put us back in our family of origins and we'll still kind of go back into old patterns. So it's just how it is. It's a reality.
I would add for a couple of things. Get coached. When you are in these situations where maybe you've got something come up, that something that is coming up, go get coached and just like work through the things that you're worried about so you can show up with the energy that you want to. And I happen to know three awesome coaches if you need some. We've got some right here. Also, just self-care. Making sure that you are, you know, the little things that you are getting enough sleep, 7 to 9 hours of sleep. Are you moving your body? We want to get about 30 minutes of moderate exercise most days a week. Are you taking care of those little things that end up being the big things? Are you engaging in your hobbies and the things that put wind in your sails to give you, you know, so you can show up as the human that you want to be? Also with boundaries too, I think it's in the way that I like to think of them as this is what I am going to do for me to keep me safe physically, emotionally, spiritually. And, you know, we can ask other people, we can make requests of other people, but I like to keep my boundaries in my hands because my boundaries are to protect me. So that I like to think of it as something that it kind of a circle that I've drawn around myself to keep me safe. And this is what I will do, not what I'm expecting you to do, but this is what I will do if I'm not feeling safe. Okay, what advice would you give to someone whose extended family is struggling to accept their spouses or their own change in faith?
And this is something I see a lot with my clients. Like, I think this happens, unfortunately, pretty common. So this is what I want to say about that is, like, sometimes you feel like maybe you're already on the margins and you just get pushed even further. And you're the family situation, or you feel like you have to defend your spouse or defend your decision to stay with your spouse. This is something I offer to clients and I offer to myself that I had never really considered before, but it's okay to take breaks in your relationships with extended family. Like, you can give yourself some space and time to process and work through what you're feeling, like feel what you're feeling. You don't have to engage with them at the same pace or the same rate that you have historically when you're going through something like this. Like, it's okay to, this is like putting, like, I like to think of it as like what you were just talking about, Chris, is a boundary around my time and my energy. And sometimes when you're going through one of these situations with a mixed faith marriage than a faith transition, more of your time and energy is being used to deal with it. And so you have less to give to extended family. And that's okay. Like, it's a time and a season thing. And you just, this is something, again, I did so much work around to give myself permission to sometimes, and I'm not stepping away from the relationship, I'm not talking cancel culture, but like stepping away for just a time so I can make sure that like my base needs are being met, that I'm sleeping, that I'm eating, that like I'm taking care of me, I'm processing emotions. And that relationship, I'll come and pick it up again when I have more time and bandwidth. Now, this is not something I would have considered as even okay before, because, you know, no boundaries was sort of my approach before. This is a way of like putting a boundary around your energy and making sure that you're prioritizing the things that need to be prioritized and really giving yourself permission to work through what you need to work through before you walk back into the complexities that really do happen in a family dynamic. And this is something I see with clients a lot. I'm like, you have full permission to just, like, you don't have to call your mom back this afternoon. You don't have to text your dad back. You don't have to go to that family reunion if you're not ready. It's a lot of work to engage in the complexities of a family dynamic. And sometimes it's okay to take a little break.
I completely agree with that. And my advice is similar. I like to think of it as like three concentric rings. And in the middle is you and your spouse. That's where all your energy and effort needs to go in dealing with your mixed race marriage. Can we talk about things as a couple before we bring in extended family? Can we compromise and problem solve and talk about all this hard stuff? And once you have that down, then it goes to your immediate family. Now, how are we, now that we can talk about things and we're solid as a couple, how can we parent our kids? How can we talk to our kids about that? Like, so then your energy is on, okay, now we're managing our immediate family. And only when those things are solid, do you even bring in extended family. Now, again, that's ideal. Sometimes it doesn't work that way because they bring themselves in and they push through, it just gets messy. But the more you can do it that way, and Dr. Kenneth Adams talks about, it's the job of the parents to swallow the loss and pain of their children living their own lives. Like, that is their job. So it is, as a child, if you're dealing with parent family dynamics, you don't have to caretake their feelings around this. You can be kind and considerate of, if they're struggling with this, but that's not where your energy needs to go. The energy needs to go to, we got to figure this out as a couple. My parents can deal with that. Our parents can deal with that. They may be struggling, or our family members, our extended family members may be struggling, but that's part of their job as a parent, is to let go and process that, get their own therapist, right? My energy needs to be here. And like you said, Brooke, when you've got your resource in your marriage and in your immediate family, yeah, then you can reach out. Now I want to hear what it's been like for you. Now I want to repair. Now I want to talk. Or you don't have to, again, it's your business. But you can't, that's when you would bring extended family in. So that's actually what I did. I wrote a letter to my in-laws only after we had figured all this stuff out with my husband and just said, here's what we're doing. I choose not to talk about it. I care about our relationship, but this is what we're doing as a family. And so far that's worked well. for me.
I have seen several clients that they've really struggled. So coming from the active believing spouse, they struggled themselves when their spouse left the church. And then when they shared with the parents or extended family, then first it was really hard for them that they were struggling. And it was like, no, we figured this out and you guys should be okay with it. And I think it's so important to remember that it takes time. It's going to take time for, so yes, parents need to figure things out on their own. And it's okay that they're struggling, just like you did. And to let people have their emotions and to, you know, to, if someone spent 2 years figuring out that inner circle and they expect the other people to have it, you know, like, oh, you shouldn't have any feelings about that. I don't think that's very realistic. So to let, you know, let people have their emotions, let people have their experiences. And it might take them some time to grieve and to go through all those different emotions that come up and to that it's okay for them to have them just like other people have as well. And we don't get to control that. So kind of a different perspective.
Can I add one thing onto that, Chris? Because I do love that. And I think what we've all been saying is like, that is going to be easier to do when you are kind of solid in yourself and in your relationship. You can kind of have a lot more, you can tolerate other people having their experience around it and give them patience and grace. So I love that you brought that up. And I think it's hard to do that if you haven't, you know, if you're kind of still in turmoil yourself and your marriage is in turmoil and you don't have no idea what you're doing in your immediate family. Yeah. Then their pain is like even harder to kind of just have patience and compassion with.
And I think too, it's important to consider as the, you know, like if you are talking to your parents or in-laws, to consider the picture you are painting of your spouse. Because, you know, if you go in and say, I can't believe he did this and blah, blah, you know, like you list all the things, they are probably going to go, they may be on your side and then they're not there for that part where you've made up or you've moved on or you're figuring things out. So I think it's important to be loyal to your spouse and to, you know, definitely to have the emotions that you're feeling and to consider the picture you're painting of your person, because that definitely can affect their extended family dynamic. Okay. Oh, Brooke, did you have a, oh, I thought you had another a thought. Okay. As we are wrapping things up, is there anything, any parting thoughts that you want to share?
No, I guess I do, actually. You were right about
that. I knew it. I could tell.
You did know it. I'm thinking about something Suzette said. I didn't even know I knew this until you asked. But something Suzette said that I want to re-highlight. And that is that these extended family dynamics, they're special. And when I say special, I mean there tends to be a lot of enmeshment. There tends to be a lack of boundaries. There tends to be the differentiation aspect is maybe not very sophisticated or mature. Like, we do tend to regress somewhat when entering back into these family systems. And so even though we may be doing a lot of work and like aware and doing all of this, you put us back in those systems and it's like weird stuff happens. Like, it's like we're 13 again or something. And I think it's just good to know that so that we can have realistic expectations for ourselves or for our spouses or for what goes on when we enter into these extended family dynamics. It's different than work colleagues. It's different than meeting with Relief Society. It's different. Like, it's different. And sometimes we expect a lot more than maybe we can always give ourselves in those situations, or sometimes we expect more from others than they're able to give. And I think it's just really helpful to be aware of, like, what is the enmeshment issues in your family, not to judge them or hate them, but just so you're aware, you know, like, do you have boundaries? Like, are boundaries allowed in your family? Or are they not allowed? Just to be aware so you know, like, the extra layers of management you need to, or care you need to give yourself. Like, have you really differentiated? You know, why or why not? Do you tend to go back in that enmesh system when you go to your family? And yet, not to beat yourself up or hate yourself for doing that, just to understand and to have realistic expectations.
Oh, I think my final thoughts are very much related to that. It's messy. And I think we just have to recognize LDS culture is, it's an enmeshed family culture. I mean, I just read our Relief Society last week, just went through, I wasn't there, but I read the talk they sent out, and it was a talk about, like, you know, the grandparents will be looking down and you can't disappoint and you can't be the weak link and you're responsible for creating this family chain. And I was like horrified, but like, this is the stuff that's in the talks and in the lessons, and that we're just an enmeshed culture, not, no right or wrong, just that's how it is. And so when you're dealing with a mixed faith marriage, which is all about differentiation, which is the opposite of enmeshment, it's like, no, we have to have some boundaries, and we can be separate people and still love each other. And trying to move from an enmeshed system into a differentiated system is so, it's going to be hard and messy. So just, yeah, on a bumpy ride, and it's not going to be welcomed by anyone because it's so unfamiliar. It feels like disconnection, right? It's because we don't have the skills in our culture that teaches enmeshment as a form of connection. We're connected because we're all on the same path to a connection coming from, like, you can be a different person and it doesn't affect my happiness. I still love you. We can care about each other. It's hard. It's a really hard jump for all involved.
And the thing that I was thinking about, so often we hear this idea of, we don't want any empty chairs in heaven, going, you know, thinking of that big, the eternal perspective. And I think for someone that maybe they've got a loved one that in this, where they feel like there's going to be an empty chair, I think instead of focusing on that eternal perspective, to focus on the chairs today. Are we creating safe spaces where people want to be together and they feel loved and safe? Like, Brooke, what you were saying earlier, that safety, how important that is, that we want to create that safety. So people want to be at Thanksgiving, or they want to be at your house on Saturday night, and to focus on those chairs instead of focusing on trying to pull people back, because that usually disconnects us. So, okay, ladies, I so appreciate your thoughts and the things that you've shared. And I think that's everything we've got for you tonight. And we'll let you know what the next one is. So stay tuned for the next Mixed Faith Marriage Mastermind. That's everything we've got for you.